thank you to TNG Coaching for sponsoring this week's episode of Recess Duty. TNG.Coaching's vision is to teach values through activity and experience, to guide creativity, instill confidence, and champion self-worth and celebrate identity. This journey begins by reflecting on our own performance, by collecting our thoughts and feelings on paper, both positive and negative. We begin to discern ways to respond to challenges. Opening a personal dialogue and sharing concerns has been proven to create deeper bonds with peers. Journaling how these relationships evolve can help assign roles and build the support structure every team needs to function effectively. When complete, your journal will stand as a lasting reminder of your commitment to your cause and ambitions for personal and professional growth. You can find the Coach's Journal on Amazon and the link down below, or go to tng.coach for more information.
Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're talking with physical health educator, youth trainer, and exercise therapist, Jay Leroy. We'll be discussing their journey and experience in education. Thank you so much for joining us, Jay. How are you doing?
I'm great, Levi. How are you today?
I'm really well. I think it's really hilarious that we are next door neighbors and yet we're doing this on Zoom.
I think I should punch on the ceiling. You might hear me through the microphone.
Hey. Yeah, it's so fun. No, I was like, you know, as a music guy, there are some things I'm just not good at. There absolutely are. And, you know, physical health education is something that I definitely am not an expert in. Absolutely. And so I was like, who do I know that's really intelligent about this that we can invite to share their story? So, Jay, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, thanks for thinking of me. I appreciate you thinking of me in that light.
Of course.
Well, so a little bit about myself. I'm originally born in Canada. I studied abroad in Australia. I had a brief, well, I actually had a pretty good athletic career in university, played some football, played some semi-professional box lacrosse around Ontario, and then went off to grad school in Australia, Southern Cross, studied primary junior education, actually. So a lot of people don't know that about me. I actually didn't study PE in my beginning of my education. So my journey started in the Little E's classes in kindergarten, grade 1, 2, 3. I've never taught in Canada, which is very interesting. Immediately after finishing my degree in Australia, I went and went to a contracted with an agency in London, in England.
Oh, cool. And,
worked as a supply teacher, but was lucky enough to, you know, get two mat leaves back to back. So I worked in two schools for 2 years straight, which was really good. So I could count that as full-time teaching, which was really lucky for a first year teacher to get a full-time teaching job at that time. Yeah. First year was in a year two class and the second was in a year three. And I was super lucky that the head was a sport-minded guy. And we talked a little bit about our experiences in university, and he actually gave me the PE coordinating role. So that's
cool.
Kind of fun. Not out of the classroom, but into PE more specifically. I had an athletic background. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really looking to just go in to specialize, to tell you the truth. So that brought me there. My visa ran up. He was ready to, that head at that school was ready to sponsor my visa, but I had just 1 weekend gone to an international fair, a CIS, Council of International Schools, free international fair, and did some interviews for fun. Nothing expected. I ended up getting offered 3 jobs on the spot. And on a Sunday afternoon, I had to make a decision that kind of changed the trajectory of life. So I had a choice of Italy. There was one in Spain and in Japan. And Japan just jumped off the table at me. I went and talked to my head and I said, hey, look, this is what happened over the weekend. Mm-hmm. He said, get out of here. Go. I had no PYP, no IB experience. This was a PYP full IB school. And mm-hmm. That's another thing that wasn't even on my radar at that time. So I jumped over there and that's where my IB adventure began. I got promoted to athletic director at the school in Tokyo. stayed there 5 years, taught in the MYP, then came over here to Korea after that. Was at a school across town from where we are at Chadwick. It was called APIS, where I was an athletic director and full school PE teacher. And now I'm in the MYP here at Chadwick. So that's like my professional kind of career. I enjoy exercising, coaching, anything to do with physical education. I'm a family man now. I love being a dad to my...
Yeah, your son is just the coolest.
And Polo as well. I can't forget Polo.
Can't forget Polo. Polo and Weston are best friends.
Yeah, there you go. That's me in a nutshell, I guess you'd say.
Oh, nice. So starting in a homeroom position and then going into specialized into PE and such, why did you want to do this? Because you grew up so in an athletic environment?
Yeah. So when I was teaching in the classroom, I came from like a really progressive like Southern Cross was really on the forefront of education and things like that. And they were already talking about transdisciplinary learning and things like that and how to incorporate, you know, the teacher's strengths in their lessons to make it more like passionate for you. So I just automatically found myself going outside for literacy, throwing balls for math and things like that when we were teaching those kind of things. And I was just like, okay, I'm falling into this every time. We're doing active things because that's how I connected to learning. Mm-hmm. So once I started figuring that out and that little position opened up, I was just, I dove into the PE side of it because I was really, you know, really sparked by how can I make learning something in PE rather than just throwing balls out and playing sport, which was what I came from. Mm-hmm. So I was mixing all this really great training that I'd just come from, you know, learning about perceptual motor and stuff like that with young kids and applying it to learning in the classroom that I was like, okay, wait, this is just too natural of a transition. I was doing some different things in PE and some teachers were like, whoa, dude, just like we're in London, like let the kids play soccer. And I'm like, no, I'm not really cool with like, I threw a ball at a kid one day and he tried to put his foot around his head, like his chin. He didn't know what to do with his hands. For me, that's like a light bulb moment. I'm like, okay, here we go. We gotta offer these things a little bit more balanced. So that's where I really dove into it. And it was a great thing about the second school that I worked at. It was called Cleves and it was an inclusive school or special needs school, one of like a proper special needs school. So we had kids in wheelchairs and kids with cerebral palsy and things like that, that were in the classrooms. They had special, you know, they had special ed and assistance with them. So they wouldn't always be in the classroom, but sometimes they would be in the classroom. And I also really enjoyed the challenge of like adapting, you know, physical education classes to those kids and involving the kids together. Because a lot of the time those kids just go, okay, PE for those guys over there and we're going to do this. But I really wanted to involve them. So that was another thing that really got me excited about the possibilities of just, you know, specializing. So,
no, I'm sitting here totally in agreement because I, coming from a music background, it is very much, there's a lot of connections that I'm drawing from right now because there is a moment where you're like, okay, so these students are your violinists. They'll just go over there and work on that. And then these students are over here and we're going to go work on this. And then I do remember one time a teacher telling me, why can't they just sing all the time? And I was like, well, there's a little bit more to music than just singing, you know, singing is an important part, but I get where you're coming from there.
Yeah.
And about, you know, creating that balance, you know, we are trying to create that balance of learning for everybody. You know, we're not going to become experts in everything, but giving everybody a little bit of taste and seeing what works for them. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, like, I don't know if you thought this way, but I think this way now. I'm like, do you consider yourself a musician who's teaching or a teacher who's a musician as well? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what I put primary. Like, I know what I put primary. I call myself a teacher of physical education.
Yeah.
Because outside of my abilities to go into a classroom anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of my colleagues are like, dude, why are you taking them in the classroom all the time? I'm just like, man, there's a lot to be done in the classroom. It's valuable. Not just, you know, we're not just running and doing pushups and throwing balls up, playing basketball and the big three sports. There's just so much more that we can do with these kids to teach them about their bodies and how they work and, you know, the mind body connection and things like that. So,
you know, now thinking about that, I actually don't know what I would put primary. You know, I always say I'm not just a music teacher. You know, we do also teach math. We do teach literacy. You know, we teach kinesthetically and making sure that kids are moving as well. So I'm going to have to think about that. That's a really good idea, Jay. I mean, for our listeners out there, what is your primary title? What do you say you are first? That's really...
Yeah. I always kind of got a little bit annoyed when people are like, oh, you're just some jock coach who, you know, who didn't, you know, want to do anything else. And you're a PE teacher now. And I'm just like,
oh, man,
if you only knew.
You know, oh, I've always been, man, the amount of times is, oh, you only teach music. I feel you, Jay. I totally get it.
The life of a specialist, hey?
You know, it's got its pros, it's got its cons. So, Jay, on that kind of subject, what is a myth about physical education that you would like to, like, debunk or tear down or shine a light to?
You know what? We just came out of the parent-teacher conferences this year, right? And we're coming off a pretty crazy time where we haven't seen a lot of parents. We haven't seen a lot of kids consistently. Like, we're lucky we're just getting back to it now. One thing that came up is a lot of parents and kids have started to label their children coming out of primary school as athletic and non-athletic. And that was something that really worried me, because I'm not sure that if we're consistently teaching PE the way it needs to be taught these days, and I'm not just saying just at our school or in general, like that, it's just a, you know, international global kind of phenomenon, because we're in a transition at the moment. You know, the North American style of PE would be your traditional style, you know, like that. By the time we get to middle school, we're not really playing a whole lot of fun games anymore. It turns into sport, which is really, you know, it's not inclusive. So what the automatic, like, connection I made was like, why have these kids labeled themselves as non-athletic, and where is that coming from? Because in my opinion, I don't think anyone is unathletic. It's just about finding what, and not even athletic, it's like, what is your definition of athletic, right? Answers and things like that are athletes. And I think just having that negative connotation towards PE and the experiences that some kids may have had of being excluded because of maybe the program wasn't developed enough to think of those kids who may define themselves as that or don't exactly have the best motor skills and things like that. But the thing that I think now we're doing, and the MYP addresses this very well if it's delivered appropriately, is that PE is absolutely inclusive now, because it's not performance-based. We have standards that we cover, but with the inquiry-based, like project-based nature of the program, it's absolutely inclusive. You know, it's all about where kids are entering at and where they end at the end of the unit. It has nothing to do with, you know, creating pro basketball, tennis players, or track athletes at the end of a unit. They will have to hit a couple performance-based standards, but it's only a quarter of, you know, the experience.
Yeah.
Whereas an old style PE lesson would be, you know, if you only do 20 push-ups, you are in this bracket. Or if you can run the mile in this, you're in this bracket, you know. And then if we're playing soccer all day and, you know, Sally doesn't enjoy soccer, she's just disengaged for that whole amount of time that we do it. A coach or teacher can do their best to try to engage that person. But if it's not their strength, unfortunately, we've left them behind a little bit. It is about, I guess, what I would say is like the old school skill and drill is not what PE is moving forward. It still definitely does exist in a lot of places, but I hope that, you know, people are becoming aware of, you know, the progress of like inquiry-based learning. It doesn't have to be just the IB either. You know, it's inquiry is just becoming a lot more of the way in most schools.
And again, as a music teacher, I'm sitting here in 100% agreement, because the amount of times I've heard students say, I'm not a musician, I'm not good at music, I can't do this. And not even just music, it's also, I'm not good at math, I'm not good at reading, I can't do this, I can't do that. And I'm like, yet. Struggle with this yet. It's okay. Yeah. And this idea that, you know, we're getting away from, it's not about the product, it's about the process. You know, you mentioned about where they're entering. You know, I believe Dillian Williams in his formative assessment calls them like entry points, finding each student's entry points. And let's see where you are now, and let's see how we can make you grow. Let's see what your next steps are. How can we help you improve? Not meet 20 push-ups, not meet Vivaldi, not meet... two digit multiplication, you know, and it is something that is slowly changing, but it is changing. The more times we're on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, and we see all these really great inquiry provocations that are getting students to think is really massive. Yeah, I know you just started, I was looking at your YouTube channel, and you just started a YouTube channel that has some really great ideas on provocations and helping students find next steps. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing that I look for is the focus that I've been taking recently has been really thinking about the concept-driven nature of the MYP. So I think the fact that we always say conceptually driven units, you know, the planning, the teaching, and the assessment need to all be aligned in that respect, right? So what I've really taken a step towards is aligning all of that, because I found that some teachers and some people, and me myself, when I was just coming in, we do one or two of those, but if we have one or two of those, it doesn't align with what the students are understanding, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're planning conceptually, and we're not delivering conceptually driven lessons and then assessing conceptually, then there's no conceptual learning going on, right? And I think a lot of us get hung up on the planning bit and struggle how to deliver it and then actually assess the understanding as far as, especially in PE, because we're so skill oriented. A lot of the things require specific skills. Mm-hmm. So we gotta take a step back and really think about the umbrella that the concept brings to a unit. So as far as next steps is one of the big things, is like, I am more concerned with the kids understanding when we're exploring the concept of form, that you understand what you need to do. And if you cannot do it now, that's not a problem. As long as you show me that you can understand what you need to do, where you need to improve, and you know how to take a couple steps in that direction, I'm super pumped about that, because the performance, again, is one quarter of what we're looking at. Whereas in the past, I think going back and, you know, not a broken record here, but the performance is not the priority, right? Yes. So we always scaffold things. And right now we're talking about form and function as the conceptual ideas, and we're using net games to explore this. And what we're talking about is deconstructing skill.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a tennis forehand. We're going like, okay, so, you know, the beginning of the unit, I threw them on the line. I said, well, from your understanding now, without me giving you any information, what is a tennis forehand? I'm going to throw a ball at you. Let's see what you do. All right. That's how we began our provocation in our things. I was like, you guys know what form is. We've already talked about what form is. We already know what function is applied to sport and game. So let's apply this right now. That was our diagnostic part of the lesson. I filmed them. Mm-hmm. Right. They were like, wait, but what am I going to score on this? I'm going to score horribly because I'm no good. I'm like, that's the point. And they were just like, why, what? Why are we doing this? But watch, what we're going to do is we're going to go back. We're going to go look at this. And guess what? It's going to be much easier to progress from this. Progress from this point forward than it is if I give you 3 weeks and then film you. We've lost the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
If I only show like you what you're doing after 3 weeks, we'll lose the most important part is you realizing all of these wonderful things that you can change on your own from just using what you know. Right. So we break down the forehand into four steps. They look at it and they go, oh man, my ready position was horrible. And I'm like, so if you can't even get to step one, what does that mean for step two, three, and four? Like, there you go. That's what you're focusing on. Let's work on your step one and everything else will fall in line. Then you have some, and this is when we talk about entry points, because then guys are in step four and they're like, oh, my follow through is just a little bit off. And I'm like, everything else is pretty good. Right. So these guys are talking about putting top spin on balls, whereas other people are talking about just approaching the ball and getting to the ball on the court. We're all doing the same thing, the same project, the same conceptual understanding, but people are at different levels to begin with. So
anyway. No, and that is like, again, you know, I started this one unit with grade three, and I showed them a picture of this little action figure walking up steps. And I said, what do you see? What do you notice? And they said, oh, stairs, colors, how many steps, big, tall, small, large. And I said, okay, let's go to the stair. And, you know, in Chadwick, we got those spiral staircase. So we went out there and I said, is that top step more important than this bottom step? And they said, yes, because it's the highest. And I said, okay, cool. Try to get there without taking the bottom step. And they said, sure. So they jumped up one. And I said, okay, you can't use the first two. They jumped up the third. And it slowly became harder. And I said, so is that top step more important than the bottom one? And they said, no. And I was like, why? And they said, because we need these to get there. And I was like, so with that understanding, let's go talk about levels of understanding of this beginning, developing, and proficient. And I showed them another grid of how it's a circle. And it's not about point A to point B, but it's about growing, because at the end of the proficient is beginning. You're going to get beginning in something else. And it is exactly what you were like talking about. It was like, oh, I'm beginning in this and developing here and proficient here. And it's different across the board. But everybody is knowing that it didn't matter, that everybody was growing. Yeah.
And what we say, the big thing is, I just say, I know it's entry points, exit points, but like, it's accessible. Is that what I come down to? It's accessible to every kid. Every kid feels included, and they know where they need to go, what step they're on to come in, and where the next step is. And that's really important. And that goes back to some of the basic stuff that I learned when, you know, I was getting Ofsted review. The government would come into those schools in London, and they would like do audits of the school. And, you know, one of the big things that they focused on was, you better make sure that you have somewhere every single lesson. This was like really micromanaged stuff. Like, we had to do lesson plans and things like that. But I mean, what a great training. Make sure you have your steps to success somewhere visual in the class at all times, and you are referring to them. And they said, that's the most important thing. And I was like, absolutely. You know what I mean? So getting away from just telling kids information and then getting them to regurgitate it, right? And I think, you know, I know that's very simple, and teachers who are listening are like, obviously, dude, but like, that's the first step of that progression for teachers, is understanding that we got to tell kids where they're going, not where they are, you know,
and or how to get there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I always say to my kids, you know, it doesn't matter to me so much of what you were learning, but more importantly of how we were learning. And if we can create that how together, even better. If you have a really great idea of what to do or your next step, let's look at it. Let's see if it works. And if it doesn't work, that's fine. There's going to be another next step, and that's okay.
And that's the wonderful thing about that conceptual driving force, is that the jump from PYP to MYP is pretty big as far as like how structured we need to do things. And some people get scared because we have these criteria and then we have these descriptors that we need to assess by. But my thing that I challenge some of the teachers that I work with is, yo, make your rubrics conceptual. Mm-hmm. So that if you have, we'll go back to my example of form and function. I have a rubric that's measuring form and function. It's not measuring tennis, soccer, rock climbing, golf, dance. You know what I mean? So you can use this rubric for any of those things, because the kids are going to understand in that context what form is and what function is, right? We talk about other units going like systems and communication and things like that. So I think that's one of the wonderful things about having that open-ended inquiry, is that once you get it, it really starts to tie together. It does take a while to understand, wait, I'm not hitting these standards in assessments. I'm hitting these standards in the unit of teaching, but not necessarily putting them on paper and creating a ticker of things kids will do. Like, not every kid's in the cookie cutter, right?
Yep.
So when we open it up conceptually like that, it just gives kids the freedom to achieve the expectations, I think.
No, absolutely. And I agree with that 100%. You know, we're not so much, you know, the standards are supporting the conceptual planning, teaching, and assessing. They are not the only thing we're looking for.
And horizontal alignment of the school. And that's what I think is the part. They're the bones of what we need to do. So we have age appropriate activities and things like that, but it shouldn't be what drives our every day.
And they're definitely not check boxes, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember when I first started out, because, you know, music and PE are very skill based. It is the nature of what we do. And I remember printing off all the standards with every kid's name on it with the square, being like, okay, we did this, you did this, you showed this, moving on. You did this, you did this, you showed this, moving on. I remember conceptual inquiry took me, as a music teacher that was taught standards based through his entire career, it was really hard. It was really hard to get away from that and to allow, I always call it organized chaos, because if you go into a room, it does look chaotic because everybody's doing something different, but overall it's on the same goal. So Jay, with somebody who is in a PE mathematics or something that is very skill-based, what is some advice you give to them on, you know, making their planning a little bit more conceptual, a little bit more inclusive?
Yeah, so I think so. I had a really good conversation with one of my coworkers the other day, and we were talking about a rubric that still kind of had some of those, you know, checklist aspects to it. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of said, we're just like, this is not allowing for authentic inquiry, because although it is giving, it's a slippery slope to go either way, right? We need the kids to know what we're expecting of them, but we also need to give them the freedom to go explore and, you know, hit those standards in their own way. So I think sometimes on one end, when we give them the checklist of things that they need to do, and we say, you know, sometimes, always, and things like that, that's not really guiding them. Whereas I think when we allow kids to understand more of the conceptual understanding and the command terms that we're asking, I think that's more authentic in that case. So we were talking about how can we open this up a little bit more? Because as teachers, of course, and I same with what you just said, I remember I was taught to make it as easy as possible for students to understand the exact task that I was giving them. I felt a little handcuffed in that. So I would create rubrics that were tickable boxes. And then I just realized that, no, that's not helping us here in the philosophy of what we're trying to do. But every single, and this is another thing I tell teachers that I'm talking to about this, is like, look, yo, I'm like 13 years into this. Okay. That's why this sounds like too much right now. And I understand that, like, conceptual units planned and all that stuff, it's a little bit further on than a lot of full school programs are. But as long as we have people that are pushing these ideas and trickling yeah. into these ideas, then it is a step in the right direction, because, you know, people come from different backgrounds and different training, and that's it. And we're all at different levels. Different, again, back to your analogy of the steps, we're all at different steps, mm-hmm. right? Work with some people who are on step number one, who are just trying to get in the classroom and get their classroom management sorted, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a veteran teacher has that down. That's like the last thing they're worried about. That's the first day. That's set. Expectations are set. And there's no behavior or, you know, all your routines are set. You can get on to the teaching and learning. Whereas some people are still struggling to figure out how to develop a rubric and things like that. So I learned in one of my, a great reflection I had of being a head of department was, you know, you can't push people past that first step. You know, and I, yes. I was guilty of that sometimes, you know, I yeah. was like, okay, all professionals here, we should all be at a certain standard. And I had to sit back. I was like, wait, we're not, just like the kids. So that's a big thing that I took away from some of my leadership experience, was that we really got to, you know, assess where people are, diagnose where they're starting, where they are in their journey. And I can help them where they are, not jump to where I am, because that's not fair to ask anyone, right?
And if we're asking our students, you know, be flexible, to be risk takers, to be okay with the process, what a great way to lead by example of also showing that to our colleagues, of being like, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, you're like you said, you're on step one. It's okay. Change one little thing. Let's keep working on step two. Let's help. Let's talk it out. You know, I always say, you know, we're all on a journey. Even us as educators, some of us are a little bit further along. Some of us are just starting, and that's okay, because, you know, with the great thing about social media and all of these resources that now we all have access to because of various, I always call them various technical advances, it's a great way to, you know, get ahead, get excited, find what you're not good at. You know, I'm just so excited to see so many connections between, you know, PE and music, and not, you know, seeing that, you know, it's always, I always remember being the musician of the guy and never really connecting with the athletes and being like, man, we're way more similar than what I ever thought possible.
I think there's way more similarities than there are differences. And not a lot of people who just look from the outside in, you know, would say that. They'd be like, well, you know, what are you talking about? It's like anything that's very skill-based, you're always going to have to apply certain standard, like certain processes to. And I think that's why inquiry lends itself to specialists a bit more sometimes. Mm. I think science is obviously a very obvious one, where, you know, the processes allow themselves, and it's like a natural inquiry process. It's like the inquiry process,
yeah.
You know, finding out answers and things like that. But approaching, you know, problems and problem solving and creating plans and then reflecting on how things go, it's very easy to do when we have very set skills that we need to
use. Yeah. For sure. I don't know. Do you know of Trevor McKinsey's Inquiry Mindset book? So Trevor McKinsey has this amazing, incredible graphic of four different levels of inquiry, like open inquiry, guided inquiry, structured inquiry. And it's this pool. And it's like at the very,
that's on my wall. I didn't know that's where that came from, but that's like my literal picture of inquiry in my head.
Yeah. isn't it? And it's just like, you know, all of those steps can be happening in the same classroom with the same day with kids at different levels. You know, so we have some kids who are ready to go into the deep end and just ready to go and take charge. Some kids need a little bit more help. And as us as practitioners of inquiry, we got to set that up.
I always ask that. That was actually the, you know, I wasn't aware of where that graphic actually came from, but I've been using that for years. I use that in my staff meetings a lot. I go, look, I identify with somewhere in the middle here as a teacher. Mm-hmm. I know this is where my teaching style is. And I know for me, I want to think more about pushing and letting go of the reins a little bit, I say.
Yeah.
That's my personal goal. I've gone through all this and I really like it. There are times when I need this and there are times when I'm like pushing more towards the deep end, you know, standing outside of the pool. But I'm like I'm on the edge right now in the more of the guided inquiry place because, you know, that's what I see that works, especially when we're talking about, you know, age appropriate, you know, the kids and their executive functioning are not always able to get to that deep, deep inquiry when they're in grade 6, 7, and 8. But I always say to my grade 9 and 10 teachers, like, guys, go for it. Take chances because they should be in the deep end. You should be out of the pool by now. And we always talk about it, like, figure out where you are now and where you want to go. Again, we're talking about next steps as far as teaching and learning. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is definitely a graphic that I have used for years as well. And I think it's a really good like visual representation of how we can also push ourselves to be more in the deep end.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah. So Jay, before we end, where can people find you?
So yeah, we were talking about that. I'm on LinkedIn, just named Jay Leroy, JAYLEROY. Like Levi said, I've started a YouTube channel, it started off as just kind of me sharing a couple of things. As I jumped a little bit more into our youth training at school, I started making some more videos so the kids could see themselves performing and we could use them as reflection pieces. So there's a little bit of my youth training and personal training content on there. There's some good coaching resources and things like that. That's Mr. Jay Leroy on YouTube. And those are the only public social media platforms that I'm using at the moment. I've had lots of talks with people about Twitter, but I'm still not quite there. I feel old. I don't know why, but I just never gotten to the Twitter thing yet. Check out my channel. I've started being a lot more active on there just because I've really enjoyed creating resources for the kids as well to see themselves performing and really reflecting on what we do every day.
For our listeners out there, all those links will be in the show notes below. So Jay, thank you so much for being here. We ask all guests here at the Recess Duty, what do you remember about recess growing up?
I remember one of my first memories of recess growing up was I was a little bit of a handful when I was a kid. I was a ball of energy, which I'm seeing right now reflected in my little guy. So I know I'm in for a little bit of trouble, but I was the kid who was just like looking at the clock, even though I probably couldn't even tell time. I was on the edge of my seat all the time, just waiting for recess. And I remember the feeling of just those doors just blasting open and literally the release of explosive energy that would come out of me. I would just run. And that's where a lot of, I trace back a lot of my success in sports was I love to run.
Yeah.
And the only reason I ever was ever any good at sports was because I was fast. I was just fast and I loved to run. I remember the feeling of running and I would have dreams of like, yo, if I can get one of these feet off the ground, I feel like I could fly. And that was one of the coolest, like weirdest memories. Cause I can't remember now if it was like these vivid reoccurring dreams I had at that age, or like I actually was flying in grade 2. I think I know a little bit more now what it was, but like, I remember it's like, I'm the fastest in the world. I can run. But like teachers were probably like, oh my goodness. Thank gosh. Side right now. But yeah, just that release of recess, you know, and that's why we all know that recess is so important for kids every day. Yeah, get that release and, you know, you never know what they're finding on that playtime. You know, they're finding their passion, or they're, you know, exploring snails in the corner, and you know, it's a cool time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how many times have we all been at recess and they all have these little acorns and being like, we found all these nuts, or they come back with a rock and like, we found a fossil. And it's just
being like so disappointed that your snowman got smashed from morning recess at lunch. And I didn't remember stuff like that. Well, I went to school in Canada, so we had snow every snow days were fun too.
Yeah. So awesome. Thank you, Jay, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.